Hello and welcome to the Everything Phil Collins podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I encourage you to subscribe if you enjoyed this week's episode. I also want to let you know that these podcasts are actually taken from our YouTube channel, and you can find out more about our YouTube videos by going to everythingphilcollins.com, where you'll get a link to watch all of our videos there, as well as some of the other cool stuff that we have on our website, everythingphilcollins.com. But I just wanted to let you know that this was originally a YouTube video, and so when I'm talking about certain visuals or if I'm holding something up to the camera, you might be missing out on that. So if you want to watch these episodes as videos, go to everythingphilcollins.com or just enjoy today's podcast episode. Oh, the poster in the back, is that a custom poster or is it actual album covers?
No, custom poster.
Okay.
What I did when I worked in an office and had access to a color copier is I just made color copies of all the CD books. Cut them out, pasted them together. So it starts with From Genesis to Revelation, goes through Live Over Europe.
Yeah.
And then these were the video releases.
Oh, okay.
Precise Live, Mama, Invisible, yep. We Were yep. Walking, Running Rome. So people are like, why do you have two Three Sides Live here?
One's
the video, one's the album.
Yeah, yeah. Or one's the British, that other version. Yeah.
To make the argument there.
I'm joking. No one asked me about it.
Well, it's funny. I've come across a similar poster, the one that's missing Duke. And I just think that's, why would anybody want that?
That's my favorite album. So I don't
yeah, me too. Yeah.
I have a poster from around the time of the Invisible Touch tour that was probably in record stores promoting kind of Genesis on tour and had all the albums listed at the bottom. And this was the mid 80s, 86, 87. And Foxtrot was not on the albums. It had Nursery Crime, but went up to Invisible Touch. But because for a while, it was like Foxtrot was out of print on Atlantic. It wasn't on CD or it wasn't.
Oh, so why advertise it?
It was really hard to, it was either hard to find or they hadn't issued it for some reason.
Crazy.
And then when it finally kind of showed up, and I remember for a while, it was like the lost Genesis album. It may have been one that I found on used vinyl somewhere first before having it on CD.
Oh, that's really cool.
I've seen posters where it starts with Trespass, but I think that's understandable since I think Jonathan King owned the rights, and maybe they just were figuring, well, this is the catalog that we have access to.
Yeah.
So a lot of them just start with Trespass, but
yeah,
it seems like a weird thing to leave out Foxtrot or Duke.
Yeah. Well, it must be a licensing thing, eh? It must be the only thing they didn't get an infinite license to.
Yeah. That's too bad. Anyway, we're getting so into the weeds already. So
let me ask you this. Does it ever surprise you that we're all here talking about a group of musicians who did something, in some cases 50 odd years ago, and yet, and I mean, haven't done anything new creatively in the past 30 odd years. And so, you know, but here we are, everybody's tuning into your show, and there's Facebook groups that with thousands of people talking every single day, Discord and Reddit. Does that surprise you that like we are still so passionate after all these years and without still being, I mean, obviously there's new stuff that we get to consume, but I just find that so surprising.
I'd say yeah, sometimes yes and sometimes no. Like yes, obviously, if you just looked at it on paper,
sure,
say, all right, this chatter would have died out in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, you might have a couple people getting together and talking about the good old days. But I think it says something about the music that it hit all of us in a certain way at a certain time and made such an impression on us that it's so, as Phil would say, near and dear to our hearts that it has the staying power that when we do talk about it and think about it, it elicits such good memories and we have such a connection to the songs that we want to keep it going. And we want to talk to like-minded people that have that same experience and feeling with the music that we did. And it feels like it's still alive, even though, as you said, 30 years have gone by.
Yeah.
And that's like Tom and I met because we were both on the official forum on the Genesis website back in the late, 2006, 2007 timeframe. And that, I think, was one of those things, kind of that early internet era. That wasn't even that early. It was just like you could find kind of slices of fandom that you didn't know were out there.
Yeah.
And that if you had one friend in real life who was into Genesis or whatever movies you liked or whatever, and then all of a sudden you could find hundreds of people who were talking about this stuff at the same level that you were at. Like, I knew other people who were Genesis fans in high school or whatever, but not to the level of detail or obsession that I had gotten into it. So I like Genesis. Isn't the thing with Phil Collins? And then you're like, oh, but let me tell you this story. Because people don't, not everyone dives into things. And there's plenty of things that I'm a fan about that I don't dive into the weeds about.
Agree.
But I think that for those of us who do dive into the weeds about it, there's been this ability to connect with, other fans and people like that. And then, become kind of semi-friendly with people. So,
semi.
I remember the first time I saw the Musical Box was in 1997 at Irving Plaza in Manhattan. And it was the first, I was the only person who knew the Peter Gabriel era among people I knew, my friends. So going there and having a packed, standing room only, general admission crowd, I'm right up front where the entire place is singing the songs that you thought only you knew. It was a one-of-a-kind experience that I'll never forget, and actually showed that, these are my people. These are the ones that I belong to, and that we weren't aware of each other, but once we met up here, we knew, these are the people that have loved this band as much as I have loved them.
Yeah, it's so true. And what you said, Mike, about there are friends or people around here I can talk to about Genesis, maybe about Phil Collins for sure. But it's really just Easy Lover and Sue Studio to find someone online and say, find a way to my heart. You know that song? And so, it's incredible. I think you're right. I think it's without the internet, it would be so interesting to see. I mean, we just wouldn't know. We wouldn't know if people are still passionate about this band.
Yeah, because it's like that's where, I always kind of thought that, and this is that, there's a lot of pluses to the online fandom and everything, but there's also, it can be a little narrow-minded at times too, in a way that, I don't want to make it sound negative or overly negative, but back when I mentioned Tom and I met on the official forum, the website for the band, and there were a couple people that I was friendly with and still am friendly with who would talk about this is what the real fans want. And I'm always a little hesitant whenever I hear the phrase kind of real fans or whatever. It's like we're slicing things a little too fine. And I was always kind of went back and said, there are 8,000 people registered for this forum. I was like, that's not even half an arena going to the concert.
Yeah.
And I was Good point. So yes, we are a voice. And this is something that,
That's a great point.
But it's like, you can sometimes get a little bit too closed in and think that, me and my friends all think that they should play Supper's Ready at every tour, which maybe they should. But I could totally get from a different point of view, why the band goes, only 5 or 10% of the audience is going to know this stuff. So are we going to do this chunk of music or something? So
it's totally true.
I think that as much as I love online fandom, I also don't want people to get to thinking that it's the real world either. So there's that balance to it.
I like to think of it and when I go in to read people who are super critical or attacking other Genesis fans, there's always going to be someone who is in the early stages of their Genesis fandom. I mean, it's we're used to it. We've been a fan of this band since
we were there,
86 there were people who obviously were fans long before, but 86 was our entranceway. But there are people who are discovering this band either maybe through their parents or through just happenstance, and are discovering this catalog, and they're going through what we went through in 86, where this is all brand new to them. They're super excited. This is a world that is, just, they're entering a larger world now, and it's tough to see when they post excitement about it. and get hit with the longtime fan saying, oh yeah, we already knew this. Oh, that's been online a long time. It's like,
totally
lay up a little bit. This person is like, right. Never squelch someone's excitement over a band or a piece of music because you've known it longer or were there first. It's like everyone's coming into it at their different times. We're all supporting each other.
Yeah.
We all just get along.
Totally agree. And also the internet has shown us too how, I'm going to talk about this later, but about how there is such a diverse opinions. And I've done surveys and I've seen people's comments. And when somebody says their favorite song is another record from Abacab, and then somebody else puts that at the very, very, very bottom. And it just blows my mind when I think, wow, I've never heard anyone come on here and say their favorite record is Calling All Stations, except for you. You know what I mean? Congratulations. God bless you. Like, that's what's beautiful about it.
Yeah. And the thing is, the fan base is diverse enough that you're going to find that random person that Calling All Stations, for whatever reason, speaks to them the most.
Yeah.
And they're not wrong about it from their point of view. And that's what's really nice about it. And I actually, it's funny, you mentioned another record. That's one of the songs from Abacab I probably find playing in my head more than anything else if I'm walking around somewhere.
Interesting.
And I remember, I think when we talked about that album on our very first episode, like that's the song that doesn't get a lot of love. But I'm like, I have always loved this song.
Interesting.
And it's probably not even in my top quarter of Genesis songs, but it's a mood that I really like from Genesis. So.
Yeah.
And we do the polls too, and you probably find it with your polls, is that almost all the album polls we've done, at least every track is getting one vote someone's favorite track. So a track that you could dismiss, another person, an example that I think a song that I've heard people talk about is Hold On My Heart.
Right.
Some people might dismiss that as schmaltzy or was it the Burt Bacharach type of song? And then another person will say, that song got me through my dad passing away or my mom passing away. And it just has a certain meaning. So you just all come into it with your own experiences and life experiences.
That's an album example. That album is special to me because I was maybe 8 years old when I got that for Christmas on cassette. And I remember, I was back as a kid, I was listening to the hits, but as an adult, I revisited it a lot more. And a lot of people will post online, you've probably seen this, like this slimmed down version of We Can't Dance, because it is quite bloated. And I often agree with them on a couple of tracks, but often they'll pull out Hold On My Heart and Tell Me Why, and some of my favorite, and Way of the World. And these are like my favorite songs on the record. And I always see people pulling out the songs that are my favorite songs. It's so strange.
And it doesn't work for you.
It doesn't work for me. Yeah,
absolutely. Well,
there's a thing, I am also a big Star Wars fan. And sometimes people talk about, humor in certain Star Wars movies. And it's like, oh, if there was 15% less humor, this would be better.
Right.
It's like, but no, and people might agree on that number, but nobody agrees on what 15% should be pulled out. And that's kind of like with the album edits, Selling England would be better if More Fool Me wasn't on there. Oh, but what about After the Ordeal?
That's
what about, Peter Gabriel didn't want the keyboard solo from Cinema Show on it.
Yeah.
So, and probably still doesn't like it that much.
Yeah,
so it's true. Like, but who's right and who's wrong? I mean, that's where the great thing about music is that it does all come down to personal taste, and no one can tell you that Way of the World isn't a great song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you, there's actually, as we talk right now, and I think back to the last couple of years listening to your podcast, and every time there's an announcement in the Genesis orbit, I'm always excited that knowing you guys are going to come up with something, and I'm going to have somebody else to talk about it with. If only with, I'm driving in my car and I'm giving my opinion, you guys can't hear me, but you know how that works. There's actually been a lot for you guys to talk about in the past few years. And I'm not even going back as far as 2007, but it feels like, with all of the kind of reunion tours with, Mike now and Phil and Last Domino, and now we have a new Peter record, from a seemingly discontinued band, a retired band, it's kind of nice that you guys have a lot to talk about that's fresh.
Yeah.
There was a kind of a apprehension of when we did the last studio album, Trick of the Tail. Mm-hmm. That was the last one that we covered because we did them in, you know, a different order.
Right. Yeah.
That was the last full one we did. And I think that was the last one we did with Stacey and Simon. Mm-hmm. That, all right, what next? Obviously there's the solo albums. I don't think we are going to cover every single solo album from every single member, but
there's a lot of Ant Phillips albums out there.
Yeah, that's true.
We may not get to.
Yeah. Knew that. All right. What I think what has been great, like you said, there's been a lot of movement in either the Genesis camp with the last Domino tour, Phil Collins solo tour, obviously Steve Hackett's keeping the legacy alive with his shows.
Yeah.
And with Peter coming on, it all seems like there's always a little bit of something in the headlines for us to talk about and to hear what other people say about it, because we're just as interested in what other people have to say as what they might think we have to say.
Yeah.
And with Peter's tour, obviously the selling of the catalog and who knows what direction that will take the music in terms of releases coming out of back catalog stuff or reissues, vault stuff. It's kind of like the world is wide open now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's even something like with Peter Gabriel putting out a track a month. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody on Twitter, I think, messaged or tweeted at us and said, like, oh, I can't wait to hear you talk about these songs each month. And I think I was like, oh, I hadn't even thought of that yet. So I think I might have even screenshot and sent that to Tom saying we should do a podcast, a mini podcast for each of these songs that comes out, because we try to do a podcast a month, and you know, some months are better than others for that.
Yeah.
But that's been kind of a nice thing for the last couple months to kind of build up to this tour and have a presence in talking about each track as it comes out and kind of what both, you know, is it living up to what we're expecting? Should we be expecting certain things from Peter Gabriel at this time?
Yeah.
And it gets into maybe not quite metaphysical, but kind of like, well, what does it mean to be an artist who's 70, you know, 2-3 years old at this point, putting out new material that has such a legacy to live up to? Like, I think that's the undercurrent of a lot of our conversations, maybe explicitly or not, about like, well, you know, what can you expect from a 70-some-year-old artist?
Yeah.
And is it going to be the best thing they've ever done? For some people, it might be.
Mm.
But I think that's an interesting conversation to have, that, you know, maybe once all the new stuff is out, we'll get more explicitly into that. But
yeah,
we did get a comment. I think it was on the Four Kinds of Horses episode.
Yeah.
Where one guy, Ben DeHoat.
Okay.
He's, I think, from Australia or something.
Sure, okay.
He just kind of nicely said, you guys don't have to be so nice in your coded review.
Right.
Like, we were kind of being hesitant about praising it. And he's like, you can say you don't like it if you don't like
that's
it.
That's true.
I was like, well, I don't think we're being too coded. Like, anything he puts out is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, whether, sure.
I think in the last one, we rated what we thought of the releases so far. And there's been some standouts. Some stuff were like, okay, that's okay. Like, I wouldn't say anything is awful or that I hate. So I wouldn't say we're holding back on negative comments. But it's a fun time. Like, this has been great that everything has been coming out once a month.
Yeah.
And you get to, you know, it's like Christmas morning every month.
Yeah, that's right.
The release from Genesis itself. Right.
So which we still have to.
You haven't done an episode on that yet.
Not yet. We're working on, we have some stuff on the back end happening with that.
So
we're working on some things that I actually need to follow up on now. So
Okay, cool.
I would think sometime this summer we'll kind of get that out. And it is also, it's a 5-disc set. It's a lot of music to, I mean, even though it's all, in some ways reissued or
just in
late circles, it's still a lot to digest to really talk about, you know, competently and everything. So,
well, you know, that's one of the things I enjoy about your show too, is that you have, you know, Tom's initial reaction to Four Kinds of Horses, which is only 4 or 5 days old or a week old. And then you have your reactions to Hello, I Must Be Going, which is 40 or 50 years old. So, you know, that's kind of fun to hear an early opinion. I mean, I would give anything, and I guess you could find newspapers, but I'd give anything to think, what was people's reaction when they first heard Sue Studio after Hello, I Must Be Going? Or, you know, what was people's reaction when they first heard In the Air Tonight after, you know, Phil coming out of Genesis? Yeah, that would be really interesting to hear a podcast from that time.
Yeah. Well, and that's what's funny is that sometimes people have said to us, and you might get this also kind of having the YouTube channel and everything, where sometimes, and it's not an invalid thing, but sometimes older fans, older than us, will say, oh, you know, it'd be great to come on and talk about what it was like to be a fan in 73 or something like that, which would be interesting.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know if that alone for us is enough to kind of make an interesting episode out of.
Right.
And I've encouraged other people, be like, hey, start your own podcast type of thing, you know?
Absolutely.
We are not we are not the only game in town.
Yeah.
We couldn't be the only game in town. No. And because we're coming from a perspective of being, you know, fans who, you know, were born in the early 70s, so became fans in the mid 80s. And so while we might really love the early stuff, it was of a different time for us. It was not new.
Yeah.
But I still always say that, like, when I went to see the Invisible Touch tour and they played In the Cage, that song was old. It was 11 years old at the time.
Wow.
So that was like,
isn't that funny? That's so
crazy. And now
even
the band talks about the old material, and I'm like, it's all old material.
I know, right? The old medley. Like, what do you consider to be old now? That's so funny. Let's talk about... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
When we talked about, like, talking to the old fans who might have had experience with the band before us, so I think the one area where we might have thought about inviting firsthand witnesses is doing a show on the Milton Keynes reunion.
Right. I think I've heard you mention that.
I think that would be helpful to have people who were there to come on and talk to us, because I think that's, you want, for once in a lifetime event, people who were actually there and can talk about the mud and the rain and Peter coming on in a coffin. Like, that's something you would want first person. But I think other than that, I think that's the only area where we thought about it.
Yeah, totally. So we mentioned this a little bit earlier, and for me, being a Phil Collins-centric show, I find Genesis fans to be a little bit scary. Every time I touch on a Genesis topic, I'm a little bit nervous. And we have these, like, I've noticed that there's these tribes, and there's probably thousands of them, but you have, like, of course, the Peter diehards, and I've personally met people who have completely hopped off at After the Lamb. And then you have the prog era people, you know, who are okay with Phil to a certain extent. Then you have the 80s people era, or I would say maybe those people would be, there's a big group of the everything people, which I would put myself into, from Genesis all the way to Calling All Stations. I love it all. I've even met people on my channel who don't like Peter Gabriel. And so they really only come on around Duke-ish or even after, which I found interesting. I didn't know there were those folks. I'm curious, we've touched on this a little bit, but I'm wondering, are you conscious of those different groups of people when you're putting together guests or topics?
I'd say yes and no. I think a lot of it is we kind of, I'm amazed that more than 20 people listen to the show. You know, when it started out, I was like, you know, if we get more than 20 people who are kind of our circle of Genesis friends who listen to this, that'd be great. So I think our idea from the beginning has always been, we're going to talk about what's interesting to us, because these are conversations we'd be having anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they'll be interesting to other people. And we get, you know, probably around 2,000 to 3,000 listeners per episode and everything.
Wow.
Which is,
incredible.
Yeah. Again, that it's more than 20 is amazing.
Yeah.
And so that's been, I think that what the way that we approach it is that, you know, if it's interesting to us, hopefully it'll be interesting to other people. And so, you know, whether it's talking to, you know, we've been lucky enough to have Ant Phillips, Tony Banks, Steve Hackett on the show and everything. You know, I would love to get Peter or Phil on the show.
Sure.
Will that ever happen? I don't know. Mike would be an interesting person to talk to. I mean, any of the actual musicians would be fascinating to talk to.
Yeah.
And then there's other people, like we've had Mike Keneally, who's a guitarist, who is also a big Genesis fan on. Mm. I think that level of guest is interesting also, because, you know, even if somebody isn't aware of who Mike Keneally is, he played with Frank Zappa in 1988 and everything, and has a decent but kind of, you know, smaller scale fan base, certainly not a Genesis level fan base or anything. But but he's somebody that can talk articulately as I stumble. And I think that's more what we're trying to find and find, whether it's guests that we've had, you know, just other fans. You know, we've had Kate Stratt, Catherine Stratton on, who's a big Mike Rutherford fan and kind of ran MikeRutherford.net for a while. To have her on to talk about Mike's solo stuff or Mike and the Mechanics and things like that. That's great because it gives a different perspective than, you know, the rest of us and everything.
So. And we came into it. I was definitely a Phil Collins fan before I was a Genesis fan. So, because in 85, when he was ubiquitous and you couldn't turn the radio on without hearing every third song from him. So I was a big fan of him first. So I think we both grew up liking everything, like liking the Invisible Touch stuff and then going back and getting the early stuff, liking No Jack Required, going back and getting Face Value and everything. And same with Peter and Steve and all that. So we get to talk kind of with like an affection for all of it.
Yeah.
And the guests that we have on, we usually, if we're spotlighting a solo album, we want to make sure, one, that they're familiar with the album and can talk about the music in a way that kind of covers all the areas we want to hit, and that they have a special affinity for the album. Like, we've had Adam Cromelow, who's part of the Genesis Piano Project, who's actually doing some shows in Canada.
Oh, cool.
So to speak. You
know. Oh, I'll have to look that up.
I think Quebec.
I think so. I think.
Oh, yes, I did see that, actually. Yeah, that's a bit of a ways for me.
Okay. So we kind of go to them and say, what solo album would you like to talk about? Like, what is the one that really touches you? Like, we wouldn't go to someone who hates Peter Gabriel and say, all right, you're going to be on to talk about Security.
Yeah.
So we do kind of notice the people who are only Phil, only Peter, only post-Genesis, early Genesis, the people who say Genesis wasn't Genesis after Anthony Phillips left, you know. All
that. Yeah. That's true, yeah.
It's like Tom and I are both kind of all ears fans and generally like, you know, most of the stuff.
Yeah.
I think because, and Stacey and Simon and Ellie were kind of like that too. So it's like, you know, again, with maybe slicing it different slight ways.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point. I think that's the point of our podcast, is that we're not just the Gabriel era or just the Phil Collins era. And if there's podcasts about those eras, more power to them, because they can approach it in their own way. And that's the great thing about podcasts, is that if you have an interest in something, you can do something about it.
And we embrace Phil.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's good.
You want to just give him a hug.
We love the Phil-only movie.
That's great to hear.
I love your painting in the background.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I've been slowly commissioning my friends and people I meet online to do Phil stuff. So I've got three. I haven't done a video yet on them because I was, I'm actually talking with this guy from Florida about doing a bust, like a ceramic bust. It's shockingly expensive. So it takes a lot of convincing of my partner to make that happen. But anyway, I want to ask you, though, like, when we're talking about these different topics, have you noticed your audience? Is there a spike on certain things when it comes to Phil album reviews versus Peter album reviews, or the traditional album reviews, or your guests? I mean, do you see a spike in numbers or engagement on Twitter or on Facebook?
Recently, I'd say probably this in 2023 was, you can really tell when it's usually, the more divisive an album is, the more comments we'll get about it. This year when we did Acting Very Strange by Mike Rutherford.
Yeah.
That even Simon posted, because Simon was one of our guests for that.
Sure.
And he got hundreds of comments just by posting that he was about to talk about this album.
Oh.
So it's the stuff that
Most of those comments being, why are you talking about this album?
But that's
one reason why we did it, too.
Yeah, because like it was an album that I had never heard before.
Yeah, that's...
Except for one song.
Sure.
And I like that the fact that what we try to do is come into it with different perspectives. Mike had heard the album before. Catherine Stratton, who was
she liked the album.
And Steinman had actually really liked the album, so it was interesting to hear their longtime opinions of it, my new opinions of it, and get all the feedback from people who.
And I was in the middle there, somewhere.
Yeah, who would just say, "Oh, that's a hidden gem of an album. There's some great stuff on it." To I wouldn't have my dog go to the bathroom on this. So it's the divisive albums, the ones that really have strong opinions are what people come out of the woodwork. I think the listenership is usually around the same, but it's the comments where we see spikes.
Yes. Well, and there's sometimes the reason I would listen to an episode like that is that I'm actually looking for a reason to give an album like that another try, because there's a lot of records. I'm a completist when it comes to the, you know, all of the records, but there's some I just can't be bothered to listen to. But I remember you had on a journalist maybe last year who was a big Tony Banks fan, I think. And I remember thinking, you know what? I think I really need to give The Fugitive a proper try. And I got a really good copy of it on vinyl. And it didn't work. She didn't convince me. But it was, you know, it's when you hear somebody say, this record is really important to me. And maybe it wasn't Fugitive for her. Maybe it was another one. But anyway, when you hear somebody say this record, and actually, I will say, I came into my show with Hello, I Must Be Going ranked at the very bottom of Phil records. Well, close to the bottom. And I don't know why. That's always been that way for me, even as a kid. But when I listened to your episode and the way that you pitched certain songs, I completely, like, it's totally redeeming itself for me. And so I kind of like when I listen to an episode, especially from you guys, and I just see a different side of an album.
Oh, thank you. I think that's what we try to... We've gotten a comment many times that a lot of people will say, you made me go and revisit this. Yeah. And either it then clicked with them, or as you said, with Fugitive, they gave it another shot, but it didn't click with them.
Yeah.
Even amongst ourselves, when we're sitting three or four people, Mike could bring a point to the table where I'll be like, I never thought of it that way. Or I never saw that part of the song, or I never listened to the song in this way. And it makes us, you know, we kind of probably play the album to death personally before we record it. But afterwards, if Mike had said something, I'll say, oh, I'm going to go re-listen to it now. Yeah. So it's nice to be able to bring those things to each other and to people who might be listening.
Yeah. But, and that was kind of gets back to the whole point of why we did this podcast, where at one point we were just sitting around talking about the band and Simon said, yeah, we should do a podcast about this because
interesting.
This is back in 2015 or so. And I was like, oh, sure, why not? And then like a week later, he's like, oh, we're going to do it this coming weekend. And I was like, oh, all right. And the very first episode we recorded, I thought on Abacab, I thought it was going to be more of a test episode. Like, is this really going to work?
Yeah.
We recorded it and sounded fine. And Simon was like, oh, now I'm putting it out. And I was like,
wow,
I'm really doing this right now.
Okay, this is happening.
But it was like, you know, having that and having then the feedback of people coming back and saying like, oh, I didn't think of it this way, or I haven't listened to it.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, I listened to it and it's still garbage or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, that's fine. But I think that what it comes down to also is that people are able to kind of have these, listening to a podcast is a very intimate thing, usually on headphones or maybe driving in your car. And you talked about kind of talking to the radio or talking to the car when you're driving. Like, I do the same thing with podcasts I listen to, where it's like, oh, because these people are in your head, you do feel like you know them after a while.
You're in the room. Yeah.
And it's been fun kind of meeting people in person who've been like, oh, we listen to the podcast. And I'm like, oh, okay. And now, like you've been listening to my voice for however many hours, and what do you think of me? And it has that minute of awkwardness, and then it's fine because you're just talking about the music then. It's conversations we would be having already.
And we're just beating away the crowds. And whenever we go out in public, you know, we have to check hotels under assumed
name. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I I actually love the dynamic of, I want to go back to the start for you guys, because I love the dynamic that you have of that group. And I miss Stacey too, because I really loved her kind of teenage fandom for Phil. And for that, because, you know, that's, you know, my, how I came into things too. It would have been through Invisible Touch, and it would have been through No Jacket Required. And so I resonate with all that. I disagree with her opinions on the Daryl's guitar solos, but I resonate with a lot of it. But I do like that every character, if you will, on the podcast plays a different role. That's kind of important. So you were sitting around, literally sitting around talking about Genesis.
Yeah, I can tell you, it was when, I mean, Ellie and I were married at the time. We are not anymore. But it was the two of us and Stacey and Simon. We were just had met up and we're kind of hanging out, and we were in our apartment talking about, maybe we had watched the Sum of the Parts documentary.
Okay.
And because that was just out at the time. And we were continuing to talk. And then Simon says, the immortal, hey, we should do a podcast about this.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, sure. And you know, it was really Simon kind of initiating things. And then Tom did a lot of the tech. Tom has always been a friend of Jenna with us in this group. Just didn't happen to be there that day.
I just happened to not be there that day.
Yeah.
But I think it was Simon saying, realizing that every time we would get together to meet up for drinks or at a show or a festival, the conversation would end up on Genesis.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why don't we just stick some mics around us?
And there was enough agreement, but also enough disagreement or not kind of, we weren't all just carbon copies of each other's stuff. Like, you know, you can do that. And generally, I tend to think that kind of for a really dynamic podcast, it's good to have at least three people.
I see.
Which is why I think we're trying to bring in kind of a third person,
sure,
different guests depending upon what we're talking about for the bigger things we do, for just to
split track. The vote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that too, and also that it becomes easier to have a dynamic conversation with three people, I think, than four. And that's why five was a good number. Also, I think I like the analogy of five of us in the tabletop, five members in Genesis.
Yeah,
then it was four for a bit. Then we kind of
said, now it's two.
We're in the calling off stations.
But yeah, it's been good for these. There was a lot of talk. Like it was very amicable when Stacey and Simon, this was, I don't know, 2017 or 2018,
probably,
said that, you know, they were thinking of just...
They were going to finish out the studio
albums. Like, we hadn't gotten Genesis through all the studio albums yet. And they just said they wanted to kind of concentrate on other things. And Simon had some projects coming up. And everything was just like, okay, that's fine. Let's get through the last ones. It was kind of like Peter announcing he was going to leave halfway through the Lamb tour.
Yeah.
Let's just finish the studio albums. Right. And then we had, it was a really good, I think the last...
Don't tell the press.
We had to keep it under wraps. The last recording of Trick of the Tail was, I don't say emotional, but it was like, this was the last time we were going to all be recording. We were in person. It was before COVID. Mm-hmm. It was like the end of an era, and Stacey's and Simon's opinions and voices were going to be missed because they were a huge part of the show. And we got a lot of comments saying, you know, they'll be missed. And it's been great to have them back appearing on our albums. In, you know, Stacey's been on a couple for Phil reviews.
She wanted to talk about those Phil albums.
Simon's been on, they'll both be back in some capacity. But like Mike said, we want to keep it not just him and I going back and forth. Yeah. It's been great for the Peter releases, but for an album or a special guest, we like to have a third party at least to bounce off ideas and separate the when we get into fisticuffs. You know,
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I think that Tom and I are in agreement more than we're not in general. So it's getting a third person in there also keeps it dynamic and interesting for us, because, you know, as much as we enjoy, you know, talking about these things, don't want it to be just, oh, I like this, so did I.
Me too.
Oh, great.
Next.
Yeah. Then it's not.
Yeah. That's fair.
We want there to be disagreements, but like, even if you like things for a different reason, that's I think honestly where we're at in general, because we do all like this stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yep. So the, it was kind of the dark ages in 2015 for podcasting. I mean, we didn't have, there was an era, I would say 2016, 2017, maybe even 2018, where fan podcasts, where fans would talk about an entire TV series, go episode by episode. And now there's doing it with bands and with artists and stuff. But back then that wasn't really a thing. And so I think that's really cool. What made you think to start with Abacab? Why wouldn't you start with something less divisive?
I think we didn't want to do chronological.
Okay.
I love that about it.
Yeah, because that I think it was Abacab was kind of a transition album.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that there'd be interesting things to talk about with it. I think it was... Yeah. It's amazing how little thought we put things. You know, it's right. Like some things you think would be tortured decisions. It's more like to start out with. I think it was just like Abacab's good. It's kind of almost in the middle of their career time wise at that point, and it's a Phil album, which I think we did want to kind of start with a Phil album.
Sure. Yeah.
Probably start with a three-man album too. So and Abacab was one.
Yeah.
We've talked about actually going back and kind of redoing that because it was the very first thing we recorded.
Right.
So maybe we would talk about it a little bit differently.
And we also didn't do my poll on that show
because
it hadn't been invented yet, and we didn't have any listeners to
write
to poll viewer
mail.
Exactly.
That was
the first one we put out there, and I think that just with a minimal amount of promotion, which was just us tweeting about it and stuff, we had like 1,000 listeners to that within the first week or two or something.
Unreal.
And it was like, oh shit! It was just kind of shocking. Yeah.
And then we decided to follow that right up with, I think, Nursery Crime, but because we wanted to go early 80s, the middle Phil kind of era, to all the way back to an early Peter era, just to show that, focusing on the Peter Phil years or focusing on the Peter.
You were scared of the fans, too.
There's a little.
Like, don't hurt us.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's been the dynamic of thinking about, well, what would be interesting for us to talk about? Mm. And again, if that's interesting for us, then it's probably going to be interesting for the listeners, too.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why we avoided the chronological piece of it. But it was a matter of kind of jumping around. But I remember, like, whenever we talked about Foxtrot, I think we were all a little hesitant of that because we were going to have to talk about Supper's Ready, which was daunting. And I think it was, I remember when we recorded that, even when we got to that track on the album, it was like, well, here we go. We're going to make either a lot of friends or a lot of enemies talking about this.
Yeah.
And with whatever opinion you have, somebody is going to disagree with it. But that's life. That's just it. And I think that for 98% of it, any comments that we've gotten about episodes have been, maybe disagreeing, but polite about it.
Sure.
It's really been rare at all that we've gotten trollish comments at all.
I would say the same, 100% the same for me as well. And I really take encouragement in what you say about if it's interesting to me, it's probably going to be interesting to 80% of the audience. And I find that too. And I do, because I'm trying to do a weekly thing, I do some really stupid ideas for videos and people love them. And, just top 10 lists that make no sense at all. But I think about it when I'm in the shower, driving the car, I think of stupid things like what would be my favorite top 10 favorite Genesis track number threes, put them in order. Like, it's fun to do that. I've got nothing else to do. And it turns out other people do as well. So that's
true. Right after this, since we're together and everything, we talked about some of the movie podcasts I do. Sometimes the pair, the people who do the podcast, will do a commentary for a movie.
Yeah.
So I said to Tom, why don't we do a commentary on one of the live, videos?
Cool.
And so it was like, and again, sometimes those commentaries, they're barely talking about what's on screen. It's more just conversation.
That's right.
Maybe about the movie, maybe not. Maybe about, what did you do yesterday type of thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, I figure, this is for us, again, without having the studio albums, the main studio albums to talk about anymore, it's like, okay, we do have to find new things to do.
Sure.
So it's a little bit of an experiment. And if people like it, great. And if not, then, you know, if we don't like it, maybe
we'll have to have fun doing it.
Yeah.
Because it shows. If we're just kind of going through the motions because we like, oh, we should do this, then it's going to come across. But
100%
held us together that we were all friends for years. At least eight or nine years before we even started the podcast. So it wasn't like we were trying to force friendship or banter or anything. Yeah. Like it was just everything came natural. And there happens to be a microphone recording it.
As much as I would love for Stacey and Simon to still be part of the podcast, if they weren't feeling it anymore, then I don't want them to do it out of a sense of obligation. But now when they come on and do things, you know, it's fun for that.
Right. So it's a good treat. So, yeah. It's a good treat and like a welcome kind of return of, you know, the old crew, you know, our own little reunion.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So are you breaking the news here? Is this an exclusive that you guys are going to start a YouTube channel and do reaction videos?
We've talked about doing YouTube stuff. I think during the winter, we do have a YouTube account, channel, whatever.
Okay. Somewhere account. Buried.
Sure. Right. And Tom was doing some little videos for that here and there. I did a live stream just as a test to see how it worked one Saturday evening when I was at home. And I just put out on Twitter saying, hey, I'm going on to, here's the link for the live stream.
Yeah.
Anybody has Genesis questions, pop on.
Yeah.
There were maybe 10 or 15 people who came around during the course of an hour.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it was kind of experimenting just to be like, can this turn into something?
Sure.
And I haven't done it since then, but we've talked about doing some sort of video content because I'm not super into video content, but I know people are. So if they like it, then maybe we can do something about it. So
I guess you can say we're breaking news that we're going to do a Phil Collins focused YouTube channel.
good luck. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Some drums and some artwork in the background.
please. Yeah.
You might film it in Canada. I don't know.
but one thing we were talking about is like we're going to both the Philadelphia and the New York Peter Gabriel shows. And whether we record something just on our phones, you know, we're going into the show. This is what it's doing. Like we didn't do that around the Genesis shows, but maybe for the Gabriel shows, that can be kind of a fun thing to do. So we'll figure it out.
Do meetups. We've met some people from, I think before the Genesis show who either listen to the podcast and say, we're going to be at this bar beforehand. Yeah. Want to come by and say hi. Yeah. We'd love to meet you. And
I'm amazed at my own appetite for Genesis related content, Phil related content, and I'm insatiable. And I think I would encourage you to do the Abacab Revisited because you could do that three times in the next 20 years and I'll continue to listen to it again. And for me, I've only been doing this a year and I've already changed my opinions. I disagree with things I said a year ago. I'm sure you find that too.
That's the reality of talking about this is that both talking about it refines your own.
That's right.
Why of what you're thinking, but also you hear other friends' opinions and like you said before, it may kind of make you look at things from a different perspective. And like, Hello, I Must Be Going has always been my number one fill out.
It's so funny. That's so cool.
And it's just, you know, it's one of those ones that I was a little disappointed when Phil said in his book that it really is
an
album, whatever, blah.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, if I could interview Phil, I'd be like, that's a better album than you think it is.
It's so funny. That's so crazy.
That'd be my message to Phil. But that, like you were saying, that was kind of initially was near the bottom, but it's still a Phil Collins album. So it was still probably pretty good for it.
100%. That's right. That's right.
It's got to be at the bottom.
Yeah, that's true.
What is your favorite Phil album?
Oh, But Seriously.
Really?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot of people to mention that. So,
We haven't covered that one. I wonder who we could have on. Like,
oh, well, you, just look north. Look north. it is so interesting. And I said, well, listen, guys, I think you definitely should do video stuff. I mean, I know it's harder to do because the files are bigger. What I'm so amazed by is when I put a video out, when I don't overthink it, and I'm shocked that I'm just a nobody and I'm sitting here talking about one song and people tune in and they comment. I just can't emphasize enough the appetite. I was telling this to John Edgington, who I got to interview, the Sum of the Parts director. And he's been, of course, you're aware of the all the stuff that he's been dumping on YouTube.
Right, yeah.
The raw files. And I just said to him, John, you cannot post enough of that stuff. You cannot post enough. And he was, I remember, I think we talked about in the interview, he was self-conscious that the audio wasn't good and that the video wasn't edited. There was a timestamp in some of it. And I'm like, that's better. It's raw. We want that. Right. So
please, the video,
if you're
guys.
Seeing something like that that's unproduced and is just raw footage, you're fine with it because you didn't have access to it before.
That's right.
And you're able to kind of see whether it's, you know, just Phil talking about stuff or the five of them together, just having conversations. It gives you that context and dynamic that, you know, 5 minutes of an edit on a document, on a documentary doesn't give you that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's where I believe Tony is with releasing some of the older stuff. Yeah. It's not perfect in his idea, in his in his mind. There are some mistakes or whatever, or on this demo of this, but there's... I don't think the fans don't care. We just want to hear, like, if you have something in the vault, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's from the vault that we've never heard before. So mistakes and all, we'll take it.
I much prefer I have a building a collection of bootlegs, vinyl bootlegs, and these are horrible recordings, some of them. And because they're illegal bootlegs, there's no quality check. So the track listing is wrong and it's a mess. But I much prefer that over even the Genesis box set because of that intimacy. It's an artifact, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Right. It's a snapshot in time that hasn't been Photoshopped to hell.
That's right. Yeah.
Are you, you mentioned Concord, and are you, do you see a bright future for new releases? I mean, I quite frankly, when I saw that announcement, I thought, oh, good. Hopefully it gets those guys out of the way. And I don't care if it's in the hands of capitalists now, because it means hopefully more for us. Are you guys, what's your outlook on that?
I'm hesitantly optimistic. I feel like obviously they want to make their money back.
That's right.
Spend a lot of money for this. And if they have access to an output of material, demos, rehearsals, live stuff, and aren't hindered by perfectionists, who shall be named Tony and Peter.
Sure.
I don't think that they see any harm in putting out this stuff going forward. So I think I'm cautiously optimistic that we will see more stuff coming out that, as I said, doesn't have to go through all the myriad of QA redubs. Like, just put it out there and they'll slowly, you know, recoup their money.
Yeah. I think that's where, you know, putting out, you know, purple vinyl edition of Susudio will only make them so much money, because that's a very fine kind of collector type of thing to, you know, sell this stuff on Record Store Day. But even like if they were to do like a Phil Collins box set of, you know, like I'm always very into demos. It's like I could listen to demos or hear them at least once till the cows come home. So if they were to do kind of Phil reissues that really dive into his demo process for Face Value, let's say, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. I think there's a demo version of every song on Face Value.
Yeah. And they're probably floating around out there. Yeah. Some of them were on the reissue that came out mid 2015s and everything.
Yeah.
But it's like, but there is more out there. And it's like, again, is that going to sell a million copies? Probably not, but it can start, you know, again, $300 million is a lot to make up for a sale there.
Yeah.
So if you want to get some return on your investment, it's on the margins where this stuff can help. So I am also cautiously optimistic. It's just going to take time to get to that stage of, you know, them figuring out what they actually have, you know, what's in the catalog, what they put out reasonably and everything. So
they need to release the demo of In the Air Tonight that Phil played.
I want to hear Tony say no.
No, exactly. Thank you.
I trust Phil's memory.
I do. Yeah.
Better than Tony's.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, and I think when we talked about In the Air Tonight, my theory is that Tony says he didn't play it because Tony's thinking that Phil might have played him the final version, like with drums and everything like that.
That's for 100%.
And Tony's thinking, oh, I would never turn down a hit like that. Whereas yeah. I believe Phil played him probably a piano yeah. demo of
with
him
no
without
drum
bells yeah. and whistles. And that's what Tony said, nah, that doesn't work for us. So,
and when you hear the demo, you should totally get why Tony would pass it by, too.
Well,
like, and even Tony says, we would have ruined it. We would have.
Yeah. Yes, he did, yeah. And even though it would have made a good Genesis song, I stole your theory without knowing it, Tom, because I said the same thing, is that it wouldn't have been with that iconic drum fill or the drum sound. And the other thing I was thinking was, it was post Follow You, Follow Me. So they were probably listening for love songs, right? They're probably listening for hits like Misunderstanding or the divorce one. Yeah, yeah. So I think maybe they were looking for more of what could sound like Follow You, Follow Me.
Well, there's a great thing, I think, on the Duke interviews for the reissues, with the Genesis reissues that came out, where I think Phil says they, you know, the record company came back with Duke and said, like, oh, you know, there's the obvious single on the album. And he was like, oh, yeah, Turn It On Again, or one of these other ones. And they're like, yeah, Alone Tonight. And even Phil kind of rolls his eyes. He's like, that's fine, but it's an obvious single. No. Probably not. So,
I didn't know it was
a single, but he was kind of saying how the record company thinks that certain things that have commercial potential on them, where the artist is like, really? That's what
you yeah. do? Actually, I don't disagree with that from a pop standpoint, from right. a ballad standpoint. Yeah, interesting. So let's go back to Peter Gabriel, because he's doing the. We talked about what this new campaign means for your show, which is lots of content, and all of us fans are enjoying that. But let's talk about from the perspective of what's, you know, how this is impacting the tour, how this is impacting his legacy, and how. What are we going to get at the end of it? I did a video last week about it. It was very popular. So people want to know. And Mike, I talked about your theory in my episode about this idea of potentially in the Christmas time getting all the mixes we've got and hopefully a mix that we haven't received yet, which might be the proper record. So aside from your content and the fact that, you know, Peter's top of mind, tell me what you think about this campaign rollout and where it's going to go.
I think it's interesting because I do think that, you know, being an artist of Peter Gabriel's stature, somebody who has a name and is well known, but also doesn't have to be tied to the traditional way of putting music out. I think mm-hmm. that's whether this is Peter is always looking for test of concept. And for him, I think this way of, you know, having this mechanism put up where he can release the music now through Bandcamp, it used to be kind of even just on his website and everything.
Yeah, I heard you mention that.
Yeah. So it's like, I think it's a very interesting way of putting something out there when you know that most artists who are a name nowadays from the 70s or 80s. If they put it out an album, you may get that first week of sales of all the fans buying it, and yeah. then it's dropping off the charts and everything. And does Peter Gabriel really care if he's on the charts anymore now?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Again, if I were to sit down and talk to Peter Gabriel, it might be more of that like business kind of type of conversation about like, how are you thinking about presenting your music now versus. Mm. What is your new music about? Because like sometimes there's that, you know, inside baseball conversation that can be interesting with that. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity for that. And I think that, you know, it seems like the tour has been selling fine. So I think people are definitely interested in going to see, you know, whatever he's doing now with it.
Yeah.
He's not held down to any kind of old standard of got to release a couple singles. Then I got to release an album,
right.
got a tour. I really like this month to month syncing with the full moon kind of, it kind mm-hmm. of it builds anticipation every month. You know, it's coming, you know, there's another new song coming out. Whereas before you'd sort of get news of a single being released or something. I would just hear a new song on the radio. Like I was like, oh, I hadn't heard this before. I didn't know it was dropping anything like that. But, and his tours, I said I'm trying to remain spoiler free of the set list. I do know a couple songs. I won't say them for anyone who else. Also trying to remain. They're not surprises, but I looking forward to the tour. I think he's going to be playing, as he mentioned in his last video, he's going to be playing a bunch of songs that aren't like show stoppers or loud production numbers, like the thoughtful numbers, like if he plays Four Kinds of Horses or if he plays some of the earlier songs. Like, these aren't get up and dance, sledgehammer, radio friendly songs, but he's more comfortable, I think, just doing what he wants to do and putting the show that he wants to put out. So I'm loving what he's doing and the method that he's doing it in.
Well, it must be difficult for these artists to shift their thinking, because I'm able to do it as a fan, but to shift your thinking in always writing hits, trying to get to number one. I don't know what they would have been thinking in the early 2000s, you know, in the Testify era or Op era. Were they trying to get the top of the charts? I don't know. But to me now, I don't think any of us want them to. It's laughable that Peter would have a number one on pop number one hit today. I mean, not to say that I would obviously much prefer his music at the top of the charts than what we're hearing now, but of course that's not going to happen. But as us as fans, we want a catalog record that there's Grammys in it. There's some serious records, things that I'm trying to think of other legacy artists that Robert Plant did one, and David Bowie, of course, had a serious record right before he passed away. And so I don't think any of us would ever, but it must be difficult for them to shift their thinking, having grown up their whole career trying for number one, to say, no, we don't need to do that.
And for Gabriel, it's been so long since he even had an album out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There is that, expectation of, what's this going to be like? And can an artist, when they're 72, shift the world the way they did when they were in 1980, when Peter Gabriel 3 came out?
Yeah.
That's probably not going to happen. Lightning probably isn't going to strike twice then.
Yeah.
Because it kind of, you had your moment of, Gabriel talks about So being his intersection with the mainstream, mm-hmm. and a very intentional one at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so now I think, like I said on our last podcast, I don't think he's interested in it anymore. I think that mm-hmm. he just wants to put out music that he likes. And if other people like it, that's great. So, the proof will be when you're at those shows and he plays the new music. And if there's crickets chirping afterwards, he might go, maybe this isn't a great live track,
But,
but it can build to, all of these artists that we love, the Genesis, the Phils, the Peters and everything, they have tracks that might not have ever been a single, but are a great live song.
Yeah.
And that, can kind of build that. Now, is Peter going to have a long enough, I hate to be realistic about it, but is he going to have a long enough touring career over the next 10 years that he's going to be building new live favorites?
Staples,
because this is now it's kind of like, is this going to be the last couple times I see Peter on this tour?
Yeah,
might be. He hasn't toured the U.S. in a while recently either.
No, it's something to think about for a lot of artists that are coming through, even younger artists like Bruce Springsteen or U2. It's like, is this our last chance to see them? If you haven't seen them and you want to be able to tell your grandkids, I saw Springsteen, now's the time almost.
Maybe like who?
Yeah. No, Springsteen. Yes.
We talked about this a little bit at the beginning, and I won't keep you much longer, but what is it about, and this is a super hard question, but what do you think it is about this band that is keeping us all together? And I mean, one of the things interesting, we've touched on it a little bit, is the orbit of albums that, and luckily it keeps both of us busy when it comes to Aunt Phillip's stuff and Steve's stuff and Small Creeps and all this amazing stuff that's outside of the band. But, I like what you said. I think it was you, Mike, saying about this connection to our past and to that moment when it meant something to us, keeping us young. Is it, how much of it is nostalgia and how much of it is the music, do you think, guys?
I'd say it's a combo. Mm-hmm. It's a good mix. I remember that what really resonated with me when I became a fan in the mid 80s was one, the quality of music that they were producing, Phil on No Jacket Required, and then Invisible Touch. That's when I also got So. I was a huge Mike and the Mechanics fan in 85. And I just remember being amazed that you had this band Genesis, where Phil had his own huge solo career. The band had an amazing career. They were just about to hit like the peak of their popularity. Peter had a great solo career. You had Mike and the Mechanics, or I might have said that, but you and they were all able to come back and go from one to the other. And I just thought that was, it says something about their commitment to the music and to each other as friends. And, you know, I was 14 in 85, 15 in 86. So it was right when I was, I guess, beginning to find yourself. Yeah. Or, and so this music just came in at a right time where it resonated with me, and just going back. And that was another thing. It was like discovering the tip of an iceberg with Invisible Touch. And then you go back and realize, okay, well, oh, I guess they also had this album in 83. And oh, they have another one in 81 and an 80. And you keep on going back and you're like, holy cow. And there was like this wealth of material that you got to envelop yourself with. And at the time, it was not, it was obviously before internet and before, just before CDs were coming in. But when you would go back to try to find out, to get some of these older albums, it wasn't easy. It was like it was like a hunt. And Foxtrot was the last one I found on cassette. And it was like, it was a holy grail. It was like just the hunt itself. I have great fond memories of going to the Wiz, which was a store in New York area, and finding the cassette of Wind and Wuthering and the cassette of Nursery Crime, and listening to Wind and Wuthering, not realizing that that's not Peter. And just having all those revelations surprise me, and wanting to share this with other people and not being able to. And now, 30 years later, we have the ability to share this. And so all these latent desires to become part of this family that didn't exist for us in the 80s now exists with the internet. And I think that's one of the reasons why the music had such staying power.
Gosh, you wouldn't have been able to even find a discography, let alone, like, you wouldn't even know what to look for without the internet.
No.
Well, and that's, it's funny talking about the nostalgia piece of it, because, like, it's, you know, nostalgia has a bad rap, but also maybe a deservedly so.
Right.
And so, because I think it is dangerous to wallow in nostalgia, and dangerous, not like you're going to be in a car accident about it or something like that, but it's just, it's easy to live in the past and not find, you know, not meet the music where it is now for you. Finding, because even when I listen to these albums that I've listened to forever, I try to listen to it fresh. Am I always successful with that? Of course not. But I think that it's more about how is this music touching me now versus in the past. And I think that for me, I'll use a Phil album as an example. I never bought Testify when it came out. But when I finally kind of bought it, when I was kind of, you know, trying to round out my collection, and I listened to Testify, I was like, this is a much better album than I gave it credit for. And I think that if I had listened to it in 2002 or whenever it was when it came out, I would have been 31 at the time, whatever. I might have been just like, this is not good at all. But it kind of worked for me at a certain level. And Both Sides is an album that's like that also, where at the time I was like, this is all stuff about this guy's middle age and doesn't quite know what he's doing with his life. I'm 22 and I don't care about the problems of a middle-aged guy. But now, being a little bit past middle-aged, I was like, oh, I cannot, I still not my favorite, but I get the album more than I did in the past.
Yeah.
And so you're still revisiting it.
That's a great
with,
point.
With the feelings from the past, but kind of trying to come to it on its own and your own terms with it going forward.
I think the nostalgia goes so far.
That's right.
But the music has to stand on its own. An example of that was when we talked about No Jacket Required, which for Stacy, Mike, myself, was a huge part of 1985 for us.
I didn't own it, but I knew every track on it.
Right. Sure. And so, listening to it takes us back to that time, but now listening to the songs in, you know, 36 years later or whatever it is, 37, there was, you know, as you mentioned, Stacy's comment on Daryl's guitar playing, which I'm sure at the time when she when this came out, she didn't have that opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, you listen to it differently as you get older.
Yes. Yeah.
The nostalgia for where you were at the time is still there, whether it can cover up for what you actually think of the songs. That might not go as far.
Well, it's a great point because I No Jacket Required is one. When I listen to that, I mostly think of my childhood and hearing it in the car and cassette. And whereas Trespass, I didn't hear Trespass in its entirety until just in the past 5-10 years and really listened to it. And now it's one of my favorite top three Genesis records. And so that to me is, it does say something about the music, regardless of nostalgia. It stands without nostalgia.
I've joked on the podcast here and there about this, where it's like periodically I might have a little bit of a crisis of faith about, do I really like this music, or is it just that I've listened to it for so long?
Oh, I think the same thing. Just
that it's been that nostalgia for it.
Yeah.
And that's why I really try to kind of approach it both fresh, mm-hmm. but also like when I hear a new album, I know I've used this analogy on the podcast, but if listeners haven't heard it, I've talked about, I had a friend who would listen to a new Paul McCartney album and would say, oh, that's garbage.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Paul McCartney, it's probably not garbage.
Right.
I'm like, yeah. He is one of the greatest songwriters of the 20th century from the Beatles and with the solo stuff. I was like, but you kind of have to listen to Paul McCartney music like you've been listening to this song for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been built into your brain already.
Yeah.
And try to listen to it from that perspective versus this is new and I have nothing to do with it. Whereas some old Beatle tracks, you might want to try to listen to it as if it's fresh.
Yeah.
It's like, there's that thing with some Gabriel stuff now where I'm like, I try to listen to it as if I've been hearing this music for the last 10 years of my life. And do you like it then? You know, is it that there's a familiarity with it that kind of works for you?
Maybe he would get more people to enjoy it if he released it on like a tattered vinyl.
With the hisses and clicks and pops. Album, you know? Yeah.
Tomorrow's episode on the channel, and by the time this interview comes out, it'll be long after that episode. But I want to give you guys a chance to participate. I'm doing the top 10 best Genesis album openers. I know that's a mouthful. So you basically look at your studio albums. What would you guys say is your number one album opener?
No pressure. I think for most groups that are not Genesis, I think that would be a very easy question because I think Genesis really took the time in picking their album opener. So it's a harder decision than if I would say, well, what's Billy Joel's best opener? I could probably like name two off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. And the others, you know, they didn't need to be the first track, but they are the first track.
Sure.
Whereas Genesis always...
I agree with you. Let me give
I have a worst one and I
do have a worst. Okay. Before you answer, let me give you some criteria. To me, a good album opener is a good song, yes, but actually more so just plays the role of setting the tone for the album and getting you into the album, as opposed to, say, Invisible Touch, which is just their biggest album opener, but not necessarily their best. So I just wanted to give you that criteria.
Sure. Well, that was the one I was going to say for my least.
I'm with you.
Because
I'm with you.
It's just the first song. It's just the first song
on
the
album.
And it's a big song. And I'd like that song. But it doesn't really set the mood.
I know that the one that I say is often my favorite opener is 11th Earl of Mar from Wind and Wuthering.
Okay.
I was sitting here very smugly as Tom was speaking, going, I've got my answer. Let's see what Tom does. But then I remembered Behind the Lines.
That was
gonna be the Behind the Lines is really good, I'm going to stick with 11th Earl of Mars.
That grabs you by the lady balls.
That's right.
Well, here's just I'll give you a peek at my list. And this is just Mike, this is a great example of how different we all are. Because my number one on the list was Behind the Lines, and 11th Earl didn't make the list. Isn't that funny? But I mean,
But do you still like that song?
Love it. But I just, there's too many openers. And I really think,
it's got to be at the bottom. At
something. And I would maybe put it 11th. And I've included Calling All Stations because I think Calling All Stations is a great opener.
That is a good opener.
Really wish the record.
I just think it's a really powerful song. It sets the tone.
It's a better opener than Invisible Touch was for that album.
What would you have open Invisible Touch?
I would do Tonight. I think the beep, bop, beep, I think that Tonight would be a good opener.
I don't know.
I was going to say Land of Confusion.
Land works as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that could be a good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches for them. Because when you look back at
it is
Musical Box,
if you want
Watcher of the Skies,
I would Dancing say with Brazilian.
Dancing with the Moonlit Night. The Lamb, Dance on a Volcano.
They're all good.
They're all great opening songs, which set the mood for the album. It's fantastic. Yeah. And wait, did you do a poll? Or are you having like?
No. Every time I do an episode like this, I give the caveat that it's very subjective and that I encourage people to post their list in the comments. And they always do. Everybody gives me their own list. And only 10% of the people agree with me. And, but then, everyone's got their own. And I just, some people will just shock you with their answers.
That song?
That's
but
right.
That's the thing. It's like people like what they like. And once you realize that it's not worth getting upset over.
Yes.
Because back in the day, you'd be almost insulted by somebody's, choice. Yeah. But hopefully you grow out of that at some point.
And if as we often said on the podcast, if I say Behind the Lines is my favorite album opener today, next month I could be listening to Foxtrot and be like, nope, it's Watcher. Watcher's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's so weird like that. But that's part of it.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. It's been such an honor to chat with you.
Thank you, Scott.
This has been so much fun.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. If you want to find out more about the show, go to everythingphilcollins.com. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe and please leave a review of the show. That really helps.